This episode contains descriptions of alcohol abuse that some listeners may find triggering. Please be advised.
Also, for what it's worth, we're going to swear like someone who had to see Gigli on a first date.
There would not be a second date. It's August 2003, and Ben Affleck is sliding into a booth at Brandy's Exotic nightclub in Vancouver. He looks around the dingy room and takes a deep breath full of sleaze. The place smells like stale cigarettes and sweat, and the seats are sticky from what Ben chooses to believe is spilled beer. Brandy's isn't exactly the kind of hot spot Ben is used to, but that's exactly why he's here. The man needs a break. It's been a few weeks since the Gigli premiere, and so far, the word of mouth sucks. And that's really bad news for Ben. Because on top of being its star, Ben built this movie. He found the script. He put his reputation behind it.
God, remember when he thought it was edgy and Tarantino-esque?
Yeah, that was the script. But the finished, edited movie is zero edge and all cheese. I mean, just Google Gigli Gobble Gobble and you'll see what I mean. Actually, don't Google it. Just know that there's a moment in the film where Ben puts his face between J-Lo's legs. And when he looks up at her, well, you know where this is going.
Wow.
Now it feels like the world is never going to let him live it down. And here's the problem. Everyone is ragging on Ben. Every time he looks over at Jennifer, she looks like she's doing just fine. But Ben is definitely struggling. Which is why tonight, he's turned to two old friends for solace. Two pillars of the community whose ethics and moral standards are unimpeachable. Christian Slater and Tara Reid.
Okay.
Relax, these are old friends. They came up in Hollywood together and they both know Ben sober. They're not going to make him drink. They're just going to get shit-faced while he watches.
Oh, you're right. This sounds like a wonderful use of Ben's downtime.
Watching his friends sling back tequila and slip into party mode, Ben feels a familiar pull. It's not the alcohol he wants. He just wants to relax and laugh. But Ben can't stop scanning the room for paparazzi. He's so wound up, he doesn't even remember what relaxing is. Then, as if by divine intervention, the cigarette smoke parts and relaxation and pleasure come striding right up to his booth. One of them winks at Ben. Wanna dance? The voice shakes Ben out of his stupor. He looks up at the dancer, the curves of her body barely contained by silver straps. Ben shakes his head, but not very convincingly.
You sure? She asks. I won't tell if you don't.
She reaches for Ben's collar, her lips inches from his face. Ben looks over to his friends, and they're completely gone, deep in the haze of party mode. Everyone in here is buzzed and having a blast. Except Ben. But he can fix that. He reaches for the nearest bottle and tips it back. The amber liquid roars through his brain, washing all the stress and insecurities away. Then he settles back in his chair for a dance.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
From Wondery, I'm Arisha Skidmore-Williams.
And I'm Brooke Ziffrin.
And this is Even the Rich. In our last episode, a boy from Boston met a girl from the block. They fell in love, then watched their story get packaged and sold as a brand, Bennifer. Now, after a massive career failure and a budding renaissance, our hero Ben goes on an epic journey to recenter himself and win the hand of his true love once and for all. This is episode 2. The boy with the phoenix tattoo. That's the champagne. Okay, let's rewind from the strip club for a minute. It's 12 hours earlier and it's almost go time on Bennifer's very first live joint interview. And Ben is sweating balls. He hunches his shoulders and crosses his arms, trying to hide the biblical flood of pit stains he's sure will come up on camera. He squints up at the hot lights and feels the heavy makeup caking on his face.
he doesn't want to be here. Even though he's done this many times, the whole Access Hollywood thing is so much easier with a buzz. But here he is sober, under the spotlight, and dreading what comes next. This interview is supposed to promote Geely, the movie he's been championing since the beginning. But Ben knows the deal. Despite his best efforts, the movie sucks, which means the focus is back on him and Bennifer. He feels a pinch on his thigh and looks over at Jennifer, smiling, radiant, ready for showtime. She gives him a big grin and he tries as hard as he can to return it. And then the executioner arrives.
I'm sorry, what is going on?
Okay, he's actually obviously not an executioner. He's more like America's favorite two-legged golden retriever, Pat O'Brien. Ben takes a deep breath and reminds himself, just go with it. Don't let him in. You know he's going to ask. Just play pretend. It'll all be over soon. Just give him what he wants.
It's your first interview together. What does it feel like? You're finally doing this.
That's pretty good, evidently. Feels like being stoned.
Apparently.
No. Oh, boy. Talk about setting the tone.
Yeah. And just like Ben suspected, what Pat wants is details about Bennifer, specifically the wedding. Rumors have been swirling ever since the Paps caught sight of the giant rock Ben gave Jennifer. When is the wedding? Will they elope? Is it really love? It's been almost a year since Ben proposed, and the tabloids are desperate to cover this story to its fairy tale wedding conclusion. But Ben doesn't want to talk about it. That's off limits. There's a line. His wedding is between him, the love of his life, and their closest friends, full stop.
Okay, but like, Ben's a pro. He's done this before, right?
Yeah, totally. But here's the thing. Pat O'Brien is like a dog with a bone. No matter what you do, he's always happy, always wagging his tail, always coming back for more treats. And Pat loves Bennifer treats. He wants to know every single detail about the proposal. Was Ben down on one knee? Did he call her dad first?
Oh my God, I would drown that man in sarcasm.
Hard same. But Ben and Jennifer have to play along. They're contractually obligated to do this. And that's when the worst thing imaginable happens. At least if your name is Ben Affleck and you're hypersensitive to how people see you. Ben gets awkward. He shows his true colors. He's trying to fend off these questions, but he's also looking over and laughing with this woman he so obviously loves. And it's clear the feeling is mutual. The whole thing devolves into nervous giggling and stops and starts a ton. And in a weird way, this totally fake Access Hollywood interview ends up showing the world who Ben and Jennifer really are. Two kids in love. To audiences, it seems super sweet, but Ben is humiliated. He leaves the interview feeling like he royally fucked up. He rants that he ruined the publicity tour and all his answers are going to be misconstrued.
Oh no, we're going back to high school, Ben.
Yeah, high school Ben is never that far away. And neither is alcohol when he gets like this. So later that night, at Brandy's exotic nightclub, the wheels come off. He relapses. And that's before he goes off alone with those dancers. Less than a week later, reports hit the Daily Mail and the National Enquirer. There were no prying paparazzi that night in the club. But apparently, Ben didn't tip enough because one of the dancers leaks the story. She alleges that Ben definitely didn't keep his hands to himself. She even reports that he went down on her at an after party.
Oh my God. Poor Jennifer. She's got to be freaking out.
Yeah, she's shaken. Not because she believes the dancer's story, though. Jennifer trusts that Ben wouldn't cheat on her. Plus, she knows him a little better than the National Enquirer. It's the drinking that worries her. And Jennifer Lopez is strong, so she gets right to the point. She confronts Ben about it immediately. But he just rolls his eyes. It wasn't like that. He just wanted to relax and pretend for a minute like he wasn't living in a fishbowl. He's like, the tabloids have crossed the line. I'm gonna sue the National Enquirer. And Jennifer's like, don't be stupid. She knows that would make this worse. She keeps zeroing in on the problem, which is Ben's decision to drink that night. But the more she pushes, the more Ben refuses to take responsibility. His voice starts rising and his face starts getting red. The longer the fight goes on, the less upset Jennifer looks. She just starts looking tired. And that tired look on her face takes Ben back, way, way back, to his childhood and watching his father sleep off a bender on the couch. And as soon as he thinks of his dad, Ben snaps out of it. But it's too late. Jennifer's already gone.
Oh, come on, Ben. Go after her. Don't mess this up.
Yeah. Ben realizes if he wants to keep her, he's going to have to be a better man. Jennifer is right. The stress of their life is here to stay, and he doesn't get a night off. He squares his shoulders back, takes a deep breath, and gives himself a once-over in the mirror. From now on, he's going to be somebody she'd be proud to marry. It's September 13th, 2003. Ben and Jen are out on their patio, poring over a table covered with post-it notes. Their wedding is 2 days away. They're thrilled, relaxed, enjoying the moment as they fine-tune who's sitting where and next to whom. Oops, can't seat Aunt Martha with the Indiana cousins. She's voting for John Kerry and is loud about it.
Wow, they sound so normal.
Yes and no, because they're not alone. They've got a wedding planner with them. And the wedding planner has a phone, which connects her with the hundreds of people on staff who are working their asses off to make this happen. PR, security, transportation, logistics. The wedding planner's phone rings constantly. This time, it's Vera Wang asking about final measurements for the gown. The wedding planner flips to the back of a massive ring binder and calls out the numbers. But they're not Jennifer's measurements. Instead, they're for one of her doubles, who will be pretending to get married at the same time at a decoy location. The wedding planner flips to another page where there's info on yet another lookalike who'll be faking a wedding at a third location. Because as big and complicated as this wedding is, there's one group of people who are not invited. The paparazzi. And like a pushy, oblivious psycho ex, that just makes the paparazzi want to be there even more. Ever since Bennifer announced their engagement, the tabloids have made finding out the secret details their holy grail. And the press have not been fucking around. They even stormed a wedding in Manchester, Vermont, expecting to catch a glimpse of Bennifer. But it was just two normal people having a completely normal person wedding. So Ben and Jennifer are determined to beat the Paps at their own game. They're going to throw them off with decoys. Their plan seems to be working until the phone rings. Ben watches as the wedding planner sits down. He watches her hand rise up to her temples. He sees her other hand gripping the phone tight.
Uh-oh.
Yeah. She doesn't even have to say it out loud. It's obvious from her face. The venue has leaked to the press. It's out. The tabloids will be there. Pat O'Brien, there for it. Ben's head starts spinning, but before he can open his mouth, Jennifer and the wedding planner go into attack mode. They start strategizing. Maybe we keep that venue and make it the decoy and shift to another one, and then we can book an additional backup. Or maybe we announce one of the backups to really throw them off and then use one of the current backups for the real thing. And as they go back and forth trying to solve this problem, Ben just slowly sinks into his chair and stares down at his feet. For him, the problem is unsolvable. It'll never end. The tabloids will never stop, which means wherever they get married, they won't be allowed to be themselves. They'll have to be in costume and makeup. They'll always have to be on. They'll have to be Bennifer. And Ben just can't do it. The announcement comes later that day. Ben and Jennifer's publicist releases a statement to the press. Due to the excessive media attention surrounding our wedding, we have decided to postpone the date. We began to feel that the spirit of what should have been the happiest day of our lives could be compromised.
Damn, September 13th was almost as sad as the day Gigli premiered.
Ben slowly opens his eyes on the morning of his almost wedding. He looks across at Jennifer. She smiles and pulls him in close. Then she whispers in his ear, "Let's use this extra time to become stronger as a couple." Ben doesn't say anything, but he tenses. He knows what she's talking about. His drinking, his partying. It's only when Jennifer gets up to go about her day that Ben breathes a sigh of relief. Ever since his relapse, Jennifer has stayed on him, like any caring partner would. But she's also scared about his well-being. So she issues ultimatums, telling him he can't hang out with certain friends, can't party, can't gamble, can't drink. He agrees to everything, reassuring her that the last time was just a setback. But he keeps finding ways to sneak out. He keeps telling himself, "This is just who I am." Now when they go out, Ben finds himself mechanically putting a hand on Jennifer's waist as they smile and wave at the cameras. He notices how she always leans in the same way for a perfunctory kiss that feels not very real. More and more, Ben feels like they're losing themselves. He feels like they've become the thing they hate most in the world. They've become Bennifer. And when they're alone, it's even worse. Being alone with Jennifer used to make Ben feel ready for anything. Now when they're together, he can't stop thinking about that vow he made, to become a man she'd be proud to marry. It dawns on him that he's done a pretty shit job upholding it. Finally, he realizes he doesn't want to be in this relationship anymore. Not because of Jennifer, but because of himself. He's just not good enough for her. 3 months later, Ben calls it over a quiet dinner. He tells her, "It's not you, it's me." And he means it. After Jen announces the breakup, there's another tabloid blitz. But this time, Ben is alone with nothing and no one to fight for. So he does what everyone does at rock bottom. He indulges in self-pity. And there's plenty of that to be had. Ben reads everything. All the trash, all the gossip. He starts to recognize the version of himself the tabloids are writing about. And it doesn't help that the tabloids are still obsessed with Jennifer. Even more so when she starts dating musician Mark Anthony. Ben scours the magazines, studying Jen's face. She looks genuinely happy only months after their breakup. Ben tries to throw himself into his work, but his latest project, Surviving Christmas, is irredeemably bad. When the final cut is presented, test audiences hate it so much that DreamWorks makes a side deal with Paramount to push the release back a year so that Paramount can unload their latest Ben Affleck flop first.
Ouch.
Yeah. Ben feels like he can't do anything right. Winning an Oscar at 25 felt like the start of a huge career. And now he feels cursed. Are his best days already behind him? But that's when something magical happens. Jennifer comes back into his life. Ever since the first time they met on set, he's felt close and relaxed with her. Her warmth and kindness are a balm to Ben's troubled soul. And even though she knows very well what she's getting herself into, she can't help but love Ben. They want the same things, massive careers and loving families. After everything that's happened, it feels scary to go back down this road so fast. But Ben can't help himself. He's head over heels in love with Jennifer Garner.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank?
Literally always.
Okay, well, the new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look, and it comes in luxe gold packaging. It feels incredibly high-end, but it is a lot more affordable.
Oh yeah, the Panorama Mascara lives up to its name by giving your lashes panoramic volume and a fully fanned-out look. Its tapered mascara wand catches every single lash, including those hard-to-reach corner lashes. When I do wear makeup, I do the bare minimum, and that's usually eyeliner and mascara and lip gloss. Yeah. And so mascara has to really pop.
Yes.
And let me tell you, L'Oreal, this baby pops.
Yeah. I do love the packaging. Like, I'm all about that.
So if you're looking for an affordable mascara that gives you voluminous, lengthened lashes, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
So as a listener of Even the Rich, you know that audio piques the imagination, which is why we're so excited for Audible's new collection of exclusive thrillers. They feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances that really bring the story to life.
Oh, yeah. The next listen on my list is the psychological thriller, The Silent Patient.
Ooh.
So it's all about a therapist who tries to unravel the mystery of a woman who refuses to talk or give any explanation as to why she shot her husband. I mean, it's going to be the perfect binge listen. And you know I love my thrillers.
I can agree. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog.
Yeah, new members can try Audible now free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500.
That's audible.com/eventherich or text eventherich to 500-500 to get started.
It's October 2004. Under the low slung brim of a Red Sox baseball cap, Ben jams his hands into his pockets to stop himself from fidgeting. All around him, tens of thousands of Fenway Park fans are cheering for Ben's hometown team. But Ben can't stop thinking about how many tabloid journalists are in the stadium tonight. How many lenses are pointed at him, documenting his every facial expression? After all, this is his first time out in public with his new girlfriend, Jennifer Garner. He looks over at her, and she smiles back at him with a look that says, "Relax. Try to enjoy yourself for a change." Ben gives a sheepish smile, turns back to the field, and starts yelling encouragement to the players, just like he's done ever since he was a kid. He tries hard to unclench because he trusts Jennifer. She's the real deal. Smart, warm, and an even bigger theater nerd than he is. And he's known her for a long time. They first met while working together on Pearl Harbor in 2001, and then again on Daredevil. Like Ben, she's a household name. But unlike Ben, everything about her is pristine. On screen, she kicks ass as Agent Sydney Bristow in Alias. Off screen, she's America's sweetheart. Ben's right to be nervous. The tabloids are definitely in the crowd that night. But with Jennifer 2.0, instead of sneering or questioning the match, they're all like, "Hey, well done, champ."
Okay, well, that was easy. They're just all of a sudden down?
Well, it's a little more complicated than yes or no. They are down for Jennifer Garner. But it's hard not to notice how often the tabloids compare her favorably to Jennifer Lopez. Garner is the all-American girl next door. Jennifer Lopez is the fiery, jealous ex. Us Weekly runs covers with the smiling new couple declaring their love. But the tabloid can't help but take shots at the demanding diva Ben used to date.
Oh, got it. Same shit, different day.
Exactly. And Ben's never been in this position before. When he was with J-Lo, the tabloids were the enemy, and even a welcome distraction sometimes. Because no matter what was going on behind the scenes, he and Jennifer Lopez had the paps to blame. They could always stand shoulder to shoulder against those fuckers. And now, with the paparazzi out of the way, it's just Ben and Jennifer Garner. And Ben and Jennifer are amazing together. They totally nerd out about plays and movies and storytelling. They even debate dramatic structure. It's like fate connected Ben with the one other smoking hot nerd on the planet. And his smoking hot nerdy soulmate has a question for him. Jen's like, "Sure, your acting career hasn't been going great lately, but you're an Oscar-winning screenwriter who loves the craft of filmmaking. Why are you sitting back and letting other people mess up the movies you make? Why aren't you at the helm? Why aren't you writing and directing?"
I mean, she's not wrong. Maybe if Ben wrote Gigli, it would be the Pulp Fiction of its day. It's honestly too bad she's so busy. She could be his agent.
Better than his agent, because they get to go home and have sex with each other every night. But more on that in a bit. For now, Ben finds the guts to tell his actual agent, the one he's not sleeping with, to put him up for some directing gigs. And the scripts start pouring in. But nothing feels right for him. Nothing hits him where he lives. So he keeps looking until he finds what he's after. Late one night, Ben sits alone at his kitchen table while Jennifer sleeps soundly on the other side of the house. Ben thumbs through a book that his agent has sent him.
reading intently. It's set in South Boston. Its characters are broken souls, struggling with addiction, desperately trying to hold themselves together. The story grabs him immediately. Now, I'm pretty sure there wasn't a mirror right across from Ben in his kitchen as he reads this, but if there was, he'd have looked up at himself and said, "Oh, fuck yes." The book is called Gone Baby Gone. And as he reads it, it's like Ben's back at that first audition when he was a kid. He can see the scenes playing out in front of him. He knows these people. They're his friends and relatives. And he knows exactly how this book needs to be shaped to make an amazing movie. So he starts writing for the first time in years. He's all alone now, with no Matt Damon to bounce ideas off of. But Ben doesn't need any help writing this. It's like the screenplay was already inside him, and now it's all just pouring out. The dysfunctional families, the legacy of alcoholism, absent parents, all of it.
I mean, they do say write what you know.
True. And Ben's about to know a lot more, because he hasn't just been creating a screenplay on those long, hot Los Angeles nights. Ben's going to become a dad himself. Jennifer Garner is pregnant. It's June 2005 in the Turks and Caicos. Sapphire waves lap at white sand beaches. Inside his hotel suite, Ben's trembling fingers fumble with his cufflinks. Even though Ben the actor always took the easy roles, Ben the man is now facing the toughest role of his life, fatherhood. And when it comes to fatherhood, the only thing Ben knows is absence and disappointment. Ben turns and sees Jennifer glide towards him, radiant in a simple white dress with a green sash over her pregnant belly. Jennifer doesn't even need to look at Ben to know how anxious he is. She goes straight for those uncooperative cufflinks and slides them into place for him. Tears well up in Ben's eyes. He takes a deep breath and blurts out, "I don't want to fuck this up." He's talking about their marriage. And he's talking about becoming a dad. Hell, he's talking about the rest of his life. But Jennifer just gives him that confident, dimpled smile and says, "I know exactly what I'm getting myself into, and I'm still here." An hour later, Jennifer takes a running leap into Ben's arms and they kiss for a really long time. Ben Affleck is a husband and a father. And he feels like with Jennifer in his arms, maybe this time he's going to get it right. It's May 2006 in South Boston, and Ben Affleck is making his directorial debut on Gone Baby Gone. Jennifer has taken a step back from her career now that their daughter Violet is here. But for Ben, all his anxiety about becoming a dad has given way to quiet confidence. Hell, if he can handle fatherhood, he can definitely handle this. Especially because Ben's shooting on home turf with a cast full of close friends. The lead is his little brother, Casey. Not that Ben's got any time for bonding. He's laser focused on 1,000 different things. And anyone watching him work can see he's totally absorbed by the work and fully in control. And bonus, at night, he's too wiped to even think about drinking. Gone Baby Gone premieres on October 19th, 2007. Critics call it mesmerizing and important. They praise Ben for his gripping directing. No snide comments, just praise. Ben Affleck is finally being taken seriously. Professionally, at least. But he knows he's got a bigger job to do at home. He needs to do this father thing right. He needs to break the cycle that started with his dad. He wants to be present for his kids, and he swears he's going to be. Soon. It's just, now that he's an A-list director, the offers are pouring in.
And the Oscar goes to Argo.
It's February 2013, and Ben is staring out at all his peers in the Dolby Theater in Hollywood. The roar of the crowd is vibrating through every bone in his body. For the second time in his life, Ben is clutching an Oscar statuette. But this is the biggest Oscar of them all. Best Picture for a movie Ben directed and produced called Argo. It's been 15 years since Ben stood on this stage, and a lot has happened since Good Will Hunting. So when he steps to the microphone to give his speech, he squints through the bright lights to find Jennifer, his wife, and the mother of his three kids.
Right now, I want to thank my wife, who I don't normally associate with Iran, but I want to thank you for working on our marriage for 10 Christmases. It's good. It is work, but it's the best kind of work. And there's no one I'd rather work with. So.
It's a beautiful moment, and everyone in the audience is practically swooning. Everyone except for one woman. The woman Ben is talking to, Jennifer Garner. She's an actress, so she knows how to play the part of dutiful wife for the cameras. But on the inside, she's less than convinced. After winning that Oscar, Ben's desk is piled high with offers. He wants to do everything. The only problem is, Jennifer wants him around. She wants him to be the husband and father he promised he would be. They were supposed to have a big, happy family together, and now she feels like a single mom. Ben loves his family, but right now, work is going so well, and he knows these hot streaks don't last. He swears to her, "I'm doing it all for you guys." He even signs on to play Batman so his son will have bragging rights at school. The only problem is, his son doesn't want Batman. His son wants his dad, and his dad is totally absent. Sure, he's not passed out on the couch all the time the way his own father was, but in some ways, what Ben's doing is even worse. And it all adds up to the same thing. He's not there. It's early 2014, and Ben is at the party of his dreams. George Clooney's house is nice and private. Big enough to mingle, small enough to feel intimate. "Hey, Batman, get over here," yells Clooney. He leads Ben down the hall to the private opening of a new vintage Casamigos. It's late. Ben should be home. Jennifer will be up waiting. One drink, then he'll go. Hours later, Ben gets home and stumbles through the house to find his bedroom door locked. And then things go from bad to worse. The only way Ben can deal with the tension at home is to drink until he passes out. He doesn't remember what he does or who.
"Oh, for the love of God, Ben, get a grip."
He knows he should, but he's craving affection. And random women look at Ben with the love and awe he's not getting from his wife right now. He knows he's a total shitbag for getting trashed and sleeping around on her. But still, he keeps swearing he's going to fix it. He's gonna straighten out. They'll do therapy. He knows he can make this right. Until the morning he opens the tabloids and sees the divorce announcement. Bennifer 2.0 is over. And Ben is totally, completely, and deservedly alone.
What is that?
That's the cry of a phoenix. He's calling for his mate because he's tortured and alone.
Oh no, are you gonna get deep?
So deep. Trust me, this is highly relevant. When your name is Ben Affleck, alone is a horrible place to be. Alone hurts. Your head fills up with nasty voices saying horrible things about you. You drink too much to get it to stop, and then you go off and do seriously stupid shit while you're drunk.
Like think with your peen?
Yeah, that and get a full back tattoo of a phoenix. The tattoo is huge, depicting a massive bird aflame in hues of yellow, red, and blue. We don't even know for sure if Ben was drunk when he got it. What we do know is that when the tabloids first got pictures of it, he was so embarrassed he lied and said it was faked for a movie role.
Okay, well, this might be one of the few times I support his lies, but also, what is he doing?
We may never know, but it sure looks like a cry for help. The sad, wailing cry of a lost soul seeking his one true Jennifer, searching for her. But there's no response. For years, our hero wanders to the ends of the earth, searching for the one and only Jennifer who can make him whole again. And then, one day, she hears him.
Oh my God, are you done?
Fine. Ben sends her a text. It's February 2021. Jennifer Lopez is lounging by the pool at her rented villa in the Dominican Republic, recharging before another long day on set. For the rest of the world, 2020 was a shit show, but Jennifer's been on a roll. It began with her sensational halftime show at the 2020 Super Bowl and ended with singing America the Beautiful at the 46th presidential inauguration.
Let's get loud.
If you must. Jennifer is enjoying a well-earned career bump and living it up. Checking her phone, she sees a message from Ben Affleck. She smiles to herself. When they broke up, she was devastated. But when she met Mark Anthony, she wondered if it was fate, that her heartbreak was intended to open her heart for a truer love. Jennifer had her twins, her career, and her businesses, but Mark wasn't who she thought he was. She held on for a long time, determined not to break up her family. But eventually, she couldn't bear it anymore. And the whole time, Ben was always around, sending her nice notes, buttering her up. As she reads his message, Jen gasps. There's a lot of text. Words like love, regret, your soul pop out. Her heart is racing. She pulls her phone in closer and scrolls back to the top to reread each sentence. Ben lists all the ways her influence has saved his life, how much he learned from her in the short time they were together, how he wishes he could turn back the clock and start again. Jen's still reading when a call comes in. It's from her fiancé, Alex Rodriguez. Jen stares at Alex's name on the screen of her buzzing phone. Then she hits reject and swipes right. Back to Ben's email.
Life is busier than ever. It might be harder to find time these days to grocery shop, prep, and cook healthy and hearty meals. I get it. But Factor's got you covered.
Yeah, so Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are chef-crafted, dietitian approved, delivered right to your door, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes.
Exactly. And Factor is tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. If you're traveling or still finishing up last week's meals, you can always pause or reschedule deliveries.
I mean, I know I've talked before about how much I love Factor because it's just so easy.
And it doesn't taste like, you know, the microwavable meals you see, especially in rom-coms when we're trying to heighten and highlight how sad and pathetic this woman's life is.
Yeah.
They don't taste like that. They taste so good as if you made them yourself or hired a chef. Head to factormeals.com/rich50 and use code rich50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code rich50 at factormeals.com/rich50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
We all face stress in our daily lives. What if the answer to a better stress response is in one key nutrient? I'm talking about magnesium, and specifically Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. This one-of-a-kind product is designed to reverse low levels of magnesium, which could have a positive effect on our stress response. But don't take my word for it. Here's a quote from a 2020 issue of the scientific journal Nutrients. Results suggest that stress could increase magnesium loss, causing a deficiency. And in turn, magnesium deficiency could enhance the body's susceptibility to stress, resulting in a magnesium and stress vicious circle. I only recommend Magnesium Breakthrough by Optimizers. It's the only organic full-spectrum magnesium supplement that includes 7 unique forms of magnesium for stress resilience and better sleep. Simply go to bioptimizers.com/ifstories, promo code ifstories10 to get your Magnesium Breakthrough and find out this month's gift with purchase. That's bioptimizers.com/ifstories, promo code ifstories10.
It's October 2018, and Ben Affleck is lying unconscious in a hospital bed. His third stint in rehab is behind him, and if it had any effect, you can't tell from his puffy, bruised face. He opens his eyes and sees his ex-wife sitting next to him in the hospital room. She tells him the cops found him lying in the street. She tells him he needs help. He needs to stop drinking or he's going to kill himself. This is definitely rock bottom. And there are a lot of levels here. Because as the scene plays out, a small crew of filmmakers watches, totally rapt. They're on the set of the movie The Way Back. And Ben's raw, vulnerable performance as the alcoholic has-been Jack Cunningham is gut-wrenching.
Okay, I gotta say, you got me. I thought that was serious.
It's a part Ben almost didn't even get. His salary is being kept in escrow because the studio doesn't trust him not to relapse during production. That's how far he's fallen. But he doesn't relapse. He shows up on time every day for the hardest role of his life. He doesn't need the director to call action or cut. He's lived all of this over and over and over again. To Ben, that cycle of boom, booze, bust felt like it was never going to end. But now he sees a way out. Literally, a way back. By being honest and taking a role that shows the world who Ben Affleck really is.
Okay, good for Ben, but he really should let the director yell cut in action. It's his job.
Yeah, he thinks he's Madonna or something. The Way Back isn't a huge hit. Ben gets some praise for his performance. But the fact is, the movie gets released into the jaws of 2020's COVID lockdown. And people have a lot more on their minds than dark indie character pieces about addiction and recovery. But that doesn't bother Ben at all. He wasn't chasing box office numbers or Oscars with this role. He wasn't even chasing praise. He was coming to terms with himself. And he was making peace with someone who's haunted him his whole life. His dad. After shooting the movie, Ben tells the New York Times in an interview that the older I've gotten, the more I've realized my dad did the best he could. It's not the highest praise in the world, but considering Ben's childhood, it's pretty generous. And forgiving his dad frees him to forgive himself.
Wow. You know what? I feel like he's actually earned that Phoenix tattoo.
Absolutely. He's rising from the ashes. He's finally being honest about himself. And once he's done that, he's ready to reach out to his long-lost true love. Ben's timing is perfect for Jennifer Lopez. Over the course of her engagement to Alex Rodriguez, she realizes he's got a wandering eye, and he's not doing much to curb it. So she does what any internationally best-selling pop diva icon would do. She kicks that bum to the curb, which opens the door for the moment everyone's been waiting for. Suddenly, our two star-crossed lovers are spending all their time together. They want to make up for lost time. Ben's worried. He's made peace with himself, and he feels like he's got nothing to hide anymore. But he's also 20 years older than he was before, and he hopes he's a little wiser, too. He knows the value of discretion. He's got his kids to think about. Being caught with Jennifer will ignite a new frenzy. They need to be careful.
Like illegal window tint careful?
Even more careful than that.
Oh, wow.
I mean, they're keeping this whole thing mostly on the DL this time. And being careful is kind of fun. Face masks make it easy to go incognito. And they switch up cars so they don't get followed. Eager to have her to himself, Ben orchestrates an Argo-style top-secret getaway to his ranch in Montana. Safe in their own company, they really reconnect. They spend the time together going for long walks and taking dips in the hot tub. They figure out how to be with each other again, without the cameras watching. All the walls come down, and it's like no time has passed. Except it has. Time in rehab have helped Ben see things more clearly. They talk about their marriages, their kids, and their regrets. But most of the time, the conversations are less serious and less conversational. When they're not ribbing each other, it's because their mouths are otherwise engaged.
Oh, I'm sure they're still ribbing for pleasure.
Nice. For the first time in years, Ben feels like he's having fun and feeling relaxed. He never wants it to end, but soon it does. The worst happens. Word gets out. Pictures hit TMZ, and just like they feared, it breaks the internet. The day after the news breaks, Ben is hunkered down at home. He's avoiding his computer, his phone, anything that might show him the headlines he knows are rocketing around the internet right now. And he's sure they're awful. In the past, Ben read every single piece of tabloid carnage and wallowed in how awful the stories made him feel. But that Ben is gone. This Ben has better things to do. That's when his phone lights up. It's his agent. He's like, "Have you seen the stories?" And Ben's like, "Absolutely not." His agent texts him a link. He tells Ben, "Open it." It's a handful of grainy and unflattering paparazzi photos with the usual poor quality. Ben and J-Lo in Montana sitting together in Ben's car. The headline is, predictably, Bennifer 2.0. Ben skims the article, bracing himself for the punchline. But it never comes. It's not a takedown. It's a fucking love letter. People are calling their relationship the best thing that's come out of the pandemic. A fairy tale. Journalists rally behind Ben and Jennifer, cheering them on for providing a bright spot of distraction in a dark time.
I mean, I thought that's what this podcast was doing, but okay.
Something settles in Ben. He realizes that things are different, and this isn't going to break them. It might just be okay. It might even be awesome. But that's just the beginning. Bennifer's hardest challenge is yet to come. It's June 2021. Ben and his kids roll up to Nobu in Beverly Hills. Ben tosses his keys to the valet and follows his chattering kids into the quiet restaurant. They've closed the place down for the night. Jennifer and her family, her 13-year-old twins, her sister, her mother, and her longtime manager, Benny Medina, are already inside snacking on edamame. Ben hugs Jennifer's mother, Lupe. He's thrilled to see her again after 20 years, and the feeling is mutual. She pinches his cheeks. Such a handsome boy. The kids are shy at first, dancing around each other, but soon they're trading memes and fashion tips. The hours float by before Ben realizes he's totally relaxed. There are no worries, no thrills, no big talk, no wild proposals, just old friends getting comfortable. The old Ben would have been restless, needing some kind of high to make the night worthwhile. Now Ben is just happy to be here, with people who know him and love him no matter what. A week later, while driving home from Jennifer's, Ben is surprised out of a reverie to a very familiar clicking sound. When he turns, he's surprised by how close the pap is. This guy is holding up an iPhone instead of a long-lens camera, sitting in the very next car, spitting distance away. And a few years ago, Ben might actually have spit. But Ben's changed.
Yeah, he's wearing clothes this time.
Good point. I mean, who knows? The guy might have been staking Ben out, or he might have just gotten lucky. There's no way to know these days with cell phones and social media. Either way, good for him. Ben just smiles and nods. The pic hits the tabloids. When Ben sees it, even he has to agree. He does look pretty relaxed. The Ben the world has never seen, the one he's always shielded to protect, is finally in full view. He has the career, the family, even the girl, and the battle scars to prove it. He used to care what people think about him, but now he knows the truth. Your life is defined by your choices. Own it, enjoy it, be good to the people you love. Everyone else can go fuck themselves.
Okay, million-dollar question. Do you think they'll last?
Well, according to a celebrity astrologist, they're a Leo power couple with a high degree of, I mean, who the hell knows? Neither of them have a great track record when it comes to relationships. Mm-hmm. But what's so incredible about the whole thing is how much the world embraced them. They were insanely beautiful megastars living impossible lives. But the reboot is all about how they're human. They're flawed. They struggle with alcohol and depression and get questionable tattoos. They admit failure and share too much information on social media. They reminisce about their past. Everyone took stock of their lives in 2020 and figured out what to keep and what to kick to the curb. So in a way, Bennifer is all of us.
Okay, I actually love that. But I gotta say, if it doesn't last, Ben, if you're listening to me, I just want you to remember that Arisha is available and she's a Libra.
God, you really are the best kind of friend.
I know.
Although, okay, what would the tabloids call us? Would it be Benricia or Skidfleck?
Oh my God, Skidfleck, the one and only. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Even the Rich ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
This is episode 2 of our 2-part series, Back to Bennifer. If you like this story, then you'll love the new Wondery show, True Love, a weekly fictional series of scandalous love stories that are sexy, funny, and filled to the brim with heartache. It's the marriage of your favorite nighttime soap opera with your favorite juicy beach read. And this week, I joined the writer and host of the show to talk about the process of making the latest series, The General and the Journalist, as well as some of the upcoming seasons. You can listen to the interview on True Love wherever you're listening right now. We use many sources when researching our stories, including Nikki Swift, The Hollywood Reporter, Vanity Fair, The Guardian, Us Weekly, People Magazine, and The New York Times. I'm Arisha Skidmore Williams.
And I'm Brooke Sifrin. Lucy Gillespie wrote this episode. Our audio engineer is Sergio Enriquez. Sound design by James Morgan. Kate Young is our associate producer. Dave Schilling is our producer. Our senior producers are Natalie Shisha and Ben Gray. Our executive producers are Stephanie Jens, Jenny Lauer-Beckman, and Marsha Louie for Wondery.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.